All right. Thank you for joining me, Mark Alexander. Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure.
This is Mark Alexander, and he is a missionary with Africa Oasis Project, and it is my absolute honor to have him with me. Mark, I've been telling my wife and different people, they just know about me, that missionaries are my heroes. They have gone to the field. They have done amazing work to spread the gospel, and that's why they're there. And so it's just amazing. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing well, thank you. It's always interesting for me to be able to say really nice things about missionaries. I usually tell people, look at me, I'm just regular folks who just happen to work a long ways from home. But we are honored and blessed to be able to serve as a missionary.
Well, just to get down to it, get right down to it, what do you do with Africa Oasis Project?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. We're a part of the Assemblies of God, Assemblies of God World Missions. And in the Assemblies of God denominator fellowship, Africa outreach, we have what we call the Africa Oasis Project, which is the water solutions or the water ministry of our missions organization. And it is the Africa Oasis Project. I can tell you simply our vision and purpose statement is we're providing fresh water and the living water of Jesus Christ for those across Africa who are thirsty for both. Mm. And that's what guides us as we go along. And so that water, fresh water, comes in many, many forms, but primarily over the years, we've done wells. We drill wells in villages, but it also can include water filtration or rain catchment, any water solution that we can use as a tool for evangelism to draw people.
Hmm. Hey, tell me, why is the good news of Jesus so important for you to give people along with the clean water? Because people say, people, I think most of the listeners know that there's clean water needs in Africa, but why is the good news of Jesus so important for you to give?
Yeah, a good question. What sets us apart, there's many what we call NGOs or non-government organizations that are out there drilling wells and doing that type of thing, and that's great. We're not territorial, bless them. I mean, they need the water with all over the world, but in Africa, the thing that sets us apart is we are first and foremost missionaries who carry the message of Jesus Christ. So we use the fresh, we provide the fresh water, but we use it also for a tool for evangelism. Evangelism to tell people about Jesus Christ. You know, when Christ ascended into heaven after the resurrection, he told the crowd, he said, hey, you need to wait, tarry there in Jerusalem. And until the Holy Spirit comes. But then he said, spread out in the area, go around the world, carry the gospel, to those who haven't heard. So that's part of our calling, is to go places where they haven't heard the gospel of Jesus Christ. And in our situation, we, of course, believe there's a salvation message, an eternal message. What I've always said is that fresh water will change your today, but the living water will change your eternity. So that's what we're trying to do, is use fresh, clean water to have an impact so we can tell them about Jesus.
That's good. That's so good. And people, there's a lot of people out there who don't know about what the crisis looks like in Africa. Can you kind of tell people about, why is it such a big crisis for clean drinking water there?
Well, worldwide, the World Health Organization says 80% of all sickness in the world is caused by unsafe and unclean water and bacteria, things of that nature. And so 80%. Now, 80% is of the sickness, but 25,000 people every day around the world will die from unsafe and unclean water. And of those 25,000 people who die, 90% of them are under the age of 5 years old. So that's a tragedy, these children around the world, as well as adults. So those are just a few facts about the need. And in Africa, it's just the same. They're desperate for fresh water. I've seen so many times people dipping filthy, dirty water out of a swamp or a mud puddle in a gourd and just hand it straight to the baby to drink. You know, it's truly tragic to see the physical suffering. And so, and also the access to clean water. They often run across the continent where they don't have a lot of the conveniences that we take for granted. They'll walk and walk and walk for kilometers, for a long ways, to just to get to dirty water. Mm. And then come back. From the time they can walk, they're carrying little pans, little cups, and they do this two, three times a day. And so there's tragic, you know, the water they get is dirty, it's yeah. sickening, and also hygiene. I mean, if you're walking, my dear sweet mama, she mm-hmm. used to say when I was a kid, she had said, you know, anybody can afford to borrow soap, there's no excuse to be dirty. And I had to come back years later and say, Mom, it's not the soap, it's the water. When you've walked mm-hmm. long ways to get that water and you come back, you know, you've got, that's for your family to drink and to cook with. You know, you don't use a lot of it for cleanliness. Therefore, hygiene becomes an issue. One old man told us, he said, I haven't washed my hands in 50 years. I'm not going to start now. You know, so it makes you realize how desperately they need the clean water as well.
Yeah, whenever I was looking into this a few years ago, I was really struck by what you guys do with providing people with clean water. And, you know, something that came to me that I hadn't realized was that, you know, women, they'll walk this far and then they miss out on education. And can you tell me a little about how kids and women, they don't even get an education because of this?
Oh, absolutely. When you spend much of your day going after water and returning water, it's really hard to be able to squeeze, like you say, education in. There's a place called Salaga in Ghana where there's a school there that our church has built. It's a primary school. It's very basic, nothing like we have here. But they said when they were able, we were able, the Oasis Project was able to put a well there at the school. And there's 852 students in that school at that time. Those kids will come to school and be able to get water. And when they go home, they take the water. So, but when they're working in the fields, when they're, you know, trying subsistence living out in the bush areas, out in the rural areas, you know, education suffers, which, of course, we all know education is what gives you the opportunity to grow. There are some in the past, and when they were fighting wars and revolts, they would say liberation before education. And it was sad because without education, there's very little liberation. You know, they're stuck in that circular environment, you know, working to live and working to get water. So education has been secondary, but with the water convenience within usable distance, it really makes a difference, allows them to go to school.
Yeah, we see on the news, thanks for talking about the whole liberty thing, but, you know, we see on the news where in Africa there is a lot of fighting, more than most places, mm-hmm. I mean, we would think. And so does it get dangerous there, like as far as, for instance, political uprisings and then also people who don't care for your faith?
Well, there have been many times where we would go into, and I don't mean to be politically incorrect or anything, but we would go into, a Muslim village and say they want to plant an Assembly of God church or a church, and they would say, no, you can't come into our village, we don't want you, we don't want the church. And then we would say, but if we would be able to drill a deep freshwater well, mm-hmm. would that be okay? And they said, and we've had this on many occasions, I can think of places like Kajali and Togo and places where they've said, if you will drill a deep freshwater well, we'll give you land for your church. You know, there's a place, forgive me for telling stories, but there's a place in Benin called Waria. Waria is right on the border between between Benin and Nigeria. And it's a very, you know, just a little dirt path where they can walk or drive old cars across. There's no border crossing. There's no guards or anything. So it's a real conduit for black market, everything, black market, gas and guns and drugs and even people. And the women in Waria were going to, were walking a great distance to get to some filthy water. And we have a church there, and some of the men of the village were asking the pastor, why have you become a wife? Why have you become a wife? And what they were saying is, because of that road full of bandits and, you know, bad guys, when the women would walk for the water great distance, they would be harassed and beaten and robbed and even raped and killed as they were going after the water by these guys. So this pastor, to protect his wife, would walk and get the water himself and bring it back. And the men would harass him about it. Why have you become a wife? You're doing a woman's work.
Mm.
Well, by God's grace, we were asked to go in and drill a well in Waria. And we drilled it. This one, a very good, deep freshwater well right there in the village, close to the church, and so people didn't have to walk that great distance and didn't have to be put in so much danger from all the, you know, the bad guys, bandits and things going across on that crossing. Well, later, people I was working with, you know, my wife and I, we went in there several times with our people we work with, and we put this well in, installed the pump and all these things. And later, when the project was over, we were leaving, saying our farewells, and they began to tell us what, at that point, what great danger we were in. Number one, being white in that environment, and with all those, you know, like I say, whatever they are, bandits, robbers, whatever, transporting all of that stuff. They told us how dangerous it really was in there. And we were so thankful, number one, that I didn't know in advance.
Mm.
And number two, that we just felt God really protected us in that very volatile environment. So, those things happen from time to time.
You felt like, you were within just, a couple miles of where this was going on, this black market?
Oh, no, it was right there, come right by the village.
We were within
100 yards.
Oh, my gosh.
Most. Yeah, and the people see, there's a whole social studies lesson here, but people who drew the lines between the countries were not Africans. So a lot of it, there was division right in the middle of tribes and people groups, and so sometimes fighting and warring and just families and language and all kinds of things cross the border. I mean, the border doesn't mean a thing to them. So now when you go to the major intersections, of course, there's border crossings and guards and this and that. But these remote places like that, they just come and go from Nigeria to Benin or to Togo to Ghana or whatever. Yeah. So it's a little bit of the old West, if you know what I mean. They're not supposed to have guns, but of course they do. It's a dangerous area, but we were blessed.
Are you ever concerned that you or your wife is in danger? Like, are you ever fearful for your safety?
You know, I've had a prayer over the years. I always prayed. I said, God, help me only be ignorant, not stupid. You know, if you don't know something and you go places and you do things, go in areas that you don't know any better, and I think God grants you grace. You're not immune, but God grants you grace. But then on the other hand, if you go places you know you should not go, it's a very dangerous area, and you go anyway, that's stupid. I used to live years and years ago in South Africa, and there were a lot of townships, squatter camps, and things where we would not go without an African pastor with us. I've driven across Sierra Leone by myself. It was a weird situation, and in a dirt road out in the back, and I'd never been on that road, and I thought, Lord, if I died out here, nobody would know. They'd say, whatever happened to that old guy? Hmm. But by his grace, you know, we were able to do what we needed to do. And there are times we've been told not to. We put two wells in Timbuktu. I've been to Timbuktu, Mali. And the first time we went as there was a group of five of us, and we drove out across the desert. The second time we went, the embassy wouldn't let us drive, but they said we could fly. So we flew from the capital city of Bamako up to Timbuktu. But the third time, the embassy said, no, they're having a revolution there. They're kidnapping Europeans, as they call us, white folks, the Tuareg. Some of the Tuareg were, kidnapping Europeans. So you try to be brave and bold, but not dumb.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I understand. For somebody out there not listening that doesn't know a lot about my background, but yeah, or us, you know, with the Assemblies of God, what the Assemblies of God is. So we're both part of the Assemblies of God, Mark and me. And the Assemblies of God, sometimes I understand they won't, not only just the embassy, but does the Assemblies of God warn you too? That's my understanding, is that they will say, hey, we don't want you to go into such and such an area.
Absolutely. That is, they're really good about listening to the missionaries, but then also we've pulled people out of what we call sensitive countries, or when they go in, they go very carefully. We did about 8 years or so in South Africa. We were there when Nelson Mandela was elected, and during that time, it was very tense. And we had a contingency plan in place at a moment with our missions board contacted us if we were told within a week you have to be out, or a couple of days, or an hour. We were prepared. My wife and I were hijacked at gunpoint in South Africa, and they stole our vehicle. But by God's grace, they left us standing alongside the street, and they took our vehicle, but they had a gun pointing at me, but they didn't kill us. And a couple hours later, right there in our neighborhood, another father and son were hijacked as well. And I'm sorry to say, God, they were shot and killed. It was tragic, hijacking. South Africa was very dangerous. And we got back to the States, and we were sharing with someone about the hijack, and they asked, when did that happen, and where, what time, and all that. You ain't know where I'm going, but they were in Denver, Colorado. And on that day, it was like, I get the 3:15 in the afternoon in South Africa, 7:15 in the morning, or whatever calculated out. As we were being hijacked, that couple were in their devotions praying for us by name, us and our two kids. Huh. And we truly believe it was God's grace that spared our lives that day because of the prayers of God's people back in this case, Colorado.
Oh, my gosh. Why is it so important to you, Mark? Why would clean drinking water and this message of salvation be so important to you to risk these situations?
Well, first of all, I don't want to mislead you that we're constantly in danger.
Sure,
that's
yeah.
not the case, but mm-hmm. those things do happen. Why is it important like, I think most missionaries would say, if we feel like it's a calling that God gave us. If there was something else to do, I think we would have done it. But I think it wasn't a lark. It wasn't a midlife crisis to take my wife and two young children in those days, about 30 years ago. When we went, we felt like it was what God wanted us to do, and we felt like we could contribute. It was our goal to be a servant, to serve the people. How can we help, and how can we spread the message of Jesus Christ? Like I said, it impacts their eternity. In our case, for the last 10, 12 years, we've been doing it, more than that, actually, have been doing it with water. And it opens so many doors, and it's a wonderful, I may not be, most well-educated, or you know, to teach in Bible schools, but I, you know, or whatever. But I, which I've done some, but I can share the gospel through the water. It's a great opportunity, and we're there to serve the church. We, the national church in these countries, we work completely through them. They're much more effective than we could ever be, because, you know, they understand the culture, the language, the history, all the, and they can live places that would be very difficult for us to live. So if we can go in and dig, drill a well, and help the local church, and the churches grow phenomenally, and the people come, I mean, it's like the circus coming to town sometimes, draw big crowds, and if that's what it takes to get the message of Jesus Christ to them, then that's why we do it. And we, you know, we're glad to do it.
Yeah, how much does that really, I can't wrap my mind around how much we have in America. And I mean, I could just go to my faucet and turn on water, and it would be, you know, just amazing compared to what these people drink every day. And that's just the very base line of what I have here. I have clothes on my back. I have shelter in every season. You know, how much can we learn from people in Africa that you just, that we have so much here and we're so blessed?
Well, I'll tell you what I say often is, you know, here in this country, in America, we're incredibly blessed. We, you know, we wash our clothes, our hands, we drink clean water without worrying about getting sick, we wash our cars, we wash our dogs, you know. I don't have a problem with any of that. I don't want anybody to ever feel guilty because we are living in a culture where this, you know, in a society where we have these things.
Yeah.
What I always say is just feel blessed. We are truly, truly blessed because much of the world does not have that privilege, the things we take for granted. You know, I go to the faucet, I go to, you know, the refrigerator door, I get clean water, and don't even think about it. If you'll allow me one little story, we have a had a little girl several years ago up in Oregon, and her name was, I guess I can use her name, Ava. Mm-hmm. And Ava, she was about 12 years old, 11 or 12, and she saw a couple of little girls who were adopted from Ethiopia. And these two little girls, these two little sisters, somehow she knew the family and so on, but they both held plastic water bottles that we drank our water out of. Well, they were given a bottle of water, and they drank it. But then that was their favorite toy because it represented clean water. They knew they could get a refill. It was, and when Ava saw that and heard about these little girls, it really struck her. So she went to her pastor of a small church, less than 100, and said she wanted to help people in Africa get fresh water, children specifically. And that pastor, bless his heart, instead of saying, oh, that's fine, little girl, but he said, no, let's do it. Well, to abbreviate a long story, Ava and her mother and her family and her parents, their whole community got together. This little girl went door to door to businesses. And to make a long story short, they raised over $12,000 to help with a well. And Ava's done it three more times. And she's grown through the years, just because she had compassion for these people in Africa that needed water. And I had the joy of going to Ava's church and meeting that dear, sweet little girl. And she was amazing. She's now a teenager and growing and continuing to sponsor wells in Africa.
Wow. So it costs about $12,000 for a well?
You know, the most often asked question we get and the hardest to answer is how much it costs, because there's so many variables. But I'll give you an answer. For example, in Malawi, we were doing wells for about $6,500. That's everything. But then over in, for example, in Gabon, we put two wells of $32,000. And you can imagine, you know, the difference. A lot of variables, how deep, how far, how remote, how hard it is to get equipment, people in there. So when people ask, I would say an average is going to be somewhere around $12,000 to $15,000. We're doing a lot of wells right now in a place called the Gambia. And those wells are costing exactly $13,875. I mean, that's an exact cost. We do not have any administrative costs. We're missionaries. I get nothing from it. You know, we're missionaries. The money goes to the wells. And if other organizations, you know, sometimes say they can do them cheaper, well, bless them. That's fine. But we put in a good deep well that is village maintainable and will last a long time.
How long does it last?
We're using a pump that we used to get in Ghana. It's called the AfriDev, developed for Africa. And I've seen them myself that have been there 25 years in Ghana. And so if it's done well, it's important when we in West Africa there, we would always leave spare parts, leave tools, leave manuals in either English or French. We would do training and do everything we could to make that maintained, because we felt like that represents not just us and the project, but it represents God. You know, this church brought us this water, and this well lasted 6 months. It must not be much of a God, if you know what I mean. So we tried to do the best we can to make it last as long as it can. There's what we call skeletons that are, they're broken pumps all over Africa, thousands, tens of thousands of them. You could have a whole ministry just fixing old pumps that are broken from different organizations.
Thank you for joining me for my talk with Mark Alexander. Be sure to check out part two of our conversation. And in the meantime, don't settle for what's good, but strive for what's best. All right. Thank you for joining me, Mark Alexander. Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure.
This is Mark Alexander, and he is a missionary with Africa Oasis Project, and it is my absolute honor to have him with me. Mark, I've been telling my wife and different people, they just know about me, that missionaries are my heroes. They have gone to the field. They have done amazing work to spread the gospel, and that's why they're there. And so it's just amazing. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing well, thank you. It's always interesting for me to be able to say really nice things about missionaries. I usually tell people, look at me, I'm just regular folks who just happen to work a long ways from home. But we are honored and blessed to be able to serve as a missionary.
Man, thank you so much for joining me. And Mark, like I said, he is with Africa Oasis Project, and then he is doing great things in Africa. And so right now he's in Springfield, Missouri. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Springfield, Missouri. And, well, just to get right down to it, what do you do with Africa Oasis Project?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. We're a part of the Assemblies of God. Assemblies of God World Missions, and the Assemblies of God denomination or fellowship, Africa outreach. We have what we call the Africa Oasis Project, which is the water solutions or the water ministry of our missions organization, and it is the Africa Oasis Project. I can tell you simply our vision and purpose statement is we're providing fresh water and the living water of Jesus Christ for those across Africa who are thirsty for both. And that's what guides us as we go along. And so that water, fresh water, comes in many, many forms, but primarily over the years we've done wells. We drill wells in villages. But it also can include water filtration or rain catchment, any water solution that we could use as a tool for evangelism to draw people.
Hmm. Hey, tell me, why is the good news of Jesus so important for you to give people along with the clean water? Because people say, you know, like, people, I think most of the listeners know that there's clean water needs in Africa, but why is the good news of Jesus so important for you to give?
Yeah, a good question. What sets us apart, there's many what we call NGOs or non-government organizations that are out there drilling wells and doing that type of thing, and that's great. We're not territorial, bless them. I mean, they need the water with all over the world. But in Africa, the thing that sets us apart is we are first and foremost missionaries who carry the message of Jesus Christ. So we use the fresh, we provide the fresh water, but we use it also for a tool for evangelism to tell people about Jesus Christ. You know, when Christ ascended into heaven after the resurrection, he told the crowd, he said, hey, you need to wait, tarry there in Jerusalem until the Holy Spirit comes. But then he said, spread out in the area, go around the world, carry the gospel, you know, to those who haven't heard. So that's part of our calling, is to go places where they haven't heard the gospel of Jesus Christ. And in our situation, we, of course, believe there's a salvation message, an eternal message. What I've always said is that fresh water will change your today, but the living water will change your eternity. So that's what we're trying to do, is use fresh, clean water to have an impact so we can tell them about Jesus.
That's good. That's so good. And people, there's a lot of people out there who don't know about what the crisis looks like in Africa. Can you kind of tell people about, you know, why is it such a big crisis for clean drinking water there?
Well, worldwide, the World Health Organization says that 80% of all sickness in the world is caused by unsafe and unclean water and bacteria, things of that nature. And so 80%. Now, 80% is of the sickness, but 25,000 people every day, 25,000 people every day around the world will die from unsafe and unclean water. And of those 25,000 people who die, 90% of them are under the age of 5 years old. So that's a tragedy, these children around the world, as well as adults. So those are just a few facts about the need. And in Africa, it's just the same. They're desperate for fresh water. I've seen so many times people dipping filthy, dirty water out of a swamp or a mud puddle in a gourd and just hand it straight to the baby to drink. You know, it's truly tragic to see the physical suffering. And also the access to clean water. They often across continents where they don't have a lot of the conveniences that we take for granted, they'll walk and walk and walk for kilometers, for long ways to get to dirty water. Mm. And then come back from the time they can walk. They're carrying little pans, little cups, and they do this two, three times a day. And so there's tragic, you know, the water they get is dirty, it's yeah. sickening, and also hygiene. I mean, if you're walking, my dear sweet mama, she mm-hmm. used to say when I was a kid, she said, you know, anybody can afford to borrow soap. There's no excuse to be dirty. And I had to come back years later and say, Mom, it's not the soap, it's the water. When you've walked mm-hmm. long ways to get that water and you come back, you know, that's for your family to drink and to cook with. You know, you don't use a lot of it for cleanliness. Therefore, hygiene becomes an issue. One old man told us, he said, I haven't washed my hands in 50 years. I'm not going to start now. You know, so it makes you realize how desperately they need the clean water as well.
Yeah, whenever I was looking into this a few years ago, I was really struck by what you guys do with providing people with clean water. And, you know, something that came to me that I hadn't realized was that, you know, women, they'll walk this far and then they miss out on education. And can you tell me a little about how kids and women, they don't even get to get an education because of this?
Oh, absolutely. When you spend much of your day going after water and returning water, it's really hard to be able to squeeze, like you say, education in. There's a place called Salaga in Ghana where there's a school there that our church has built. It's a primary school. It's very basic, nothing like we have here. But they said when they were able, we were able, the Oasis Project was able to put a well there at the school. And there's 852 students in that school at that time. Those kids will come to school and be able to get water, and when they go home, they take the water. So, but when they're working in the fields, when they're, you know, trying subsistence living out in the bush areas, out in the rural areas, you know, education suffers, which, of course, we all know, education is what gives you the opportunity to grow. There are some in the past, and when they were fighting wars and revolts, they would say liberation before education. And it was sad because without education, there's very little liberation. You know, they're stuck in that circular environment, you know, working to live and working to get water. So education has been secondary, but with the water convenience within usable distance, it really makes a difference. Allows them to go to school.
Yeah, we see on the news, thanks for talking about the whole liberty thing, but, you know, we see on the news where in Africa there is a lot of fighting, more than most places, I mean, we would think. And so, does it get dangerous there, like as far as, for instance, political uprisings, and then also people who don't care for your faith?
Well, yeah, there have been many times where we would go into, and I don't mean to be politically incorrect or anything, but we would go into a Muslim village and say they want to plant an Assembly of God church or a church. And they would say, no, you can't come into our village. We don't want you. We don't want the church. And then we would say, but if we would be able to drill a deep freshwater well, would that be okay? And they said, and we've had this on many occasions. I can think of places like Kajali and Togo and places where they've said, if you will drill a deep freshwater well, we'll give you land for your church. You know, there's a place, forgive me for telling stories, but there's a place in Benin called Waria. Waria is right on the border between Benin and Nigeria. And it's a very, you know, just a little dirt path where they can walk or drive old cars across. There's no border crossing. There's no guards or anything. So it's a real conduit for black market, everything, black market, gas and guns and drugs and even people. And the women in Waria were walking a great distance to get to some filthy water. And we have a church there, and some of the men of the village were asking the pastor, why have you become a wife? Why have you become a wife? And what they were saying is, because of that road full of bandits and, you know, bad guys, when the women would walk for the water great distance, they would be harassed and beaten and robbed and even raped and killed as they were going after the water by these guys. So this pastor, to protect his wife, would walk and get the water himself and bring it back. And the men would harass him about it. Why have you become a wife? You're doing a woman's work. Well, by God's grace, we were asked to go in and drill a well in Waria. And we drilled this one, a very good, deep freshwater well right there in the village, close to the church. And so people didn't have to walk that great distance and didn't have to be put in so much danger from all the, you know, the bad guys, bandits and things going across on that crossing. Well, later, people I was working with, you know, my wife and I, we went in there several times with our people we work with, and we put this well in, installed the pump and all these things. And later, when the project was over, we were leaving, saying our farewells, and they began to tell us what at that point how what great danger we were in. Number one, being white in that environment, and with all those, you know, like I say, whatever they are, bandits, robbers, whatever, transporting all of that stuff. They told us how dangerous it really was in there, and we were so thankful, number one, that I didn't know it in advance, and number two, that we just felt God really protected us in that very volatile environment. So, those things happen from time to time.
You felt like, you were within just, a couple miles of where this was going on, this black market?
Oh, no, it was right there. We come right by the village. We were within 100 yards.
Oh, my gosh.
The people see, well, there's a whole social studies lesson here, but people who drew the lines between the countries were not Africans. So a lot of it, there was division right in the middle of tribes and people groups, and so sometimes fighting and warring and just families and language and all kinds of things cross the border. I mean, the border doesn't mean a thing to them. So now when you go to the major intersections, of course, there's border crossings and guards and this and that. But these remote places like that, they just come and go from Nigeria to Benin or to Togo to Ghana or whatever. Yeah. So it's a little bit of the old West, if you know what I mean. They're not supposed to have guns, but of course they do. It's a dangerous area, but we were blessed.
Are you ever concerned that you or your wife is in danger? Like, are you ever fearful for your safety?
You know, I've had a prayer over the years. I always prayed. I said, God, help me only be ignorant, not stupid. You know, if you don't know something and you go places and you do things, go in areas that you don't know any better, and I think God grants you grace. You're not immune, but God grants you grace. But then on the other hand, if you go places you know you should not go, it's a very dangerous area, and you go anyway, that's stupid. I used to live years and years ago in South Africa, and there were a lot of townships, squatter camps, and things where we would not go without an African pastor with us. I've driven across Sierra Leone by myself. It was a weird situation, and in a dirt road out in the back, and I'd never been on that road, and I thought, Lord, if I died out here, nobody would know. They said, whatever happened to that old guy? But by his grace, we were able to do what we needed to do. And there are times we've been told not to. We put two wells in Timbuktu. I've been to Timbuktu, Mali. And the first time we went as there was a group of five of us, and we drove out across the desert. The second time we went, the embassy wouldn't let us drive, but they said we could fly. So we flew from the capital city of Bamako up to Timbuktu. But the third time, the embassy said, no, they're having a revolution there. They're kidnapping Europeans, as they call us, white folks, the Tuareg. Some of the Tuareg were, kidnapping Europeans. So you try to be brave and bold, but not dumb.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I understand. For somebody out there not listening that doesn't know a lot about my background, but with the Assemblies of God, what the Assemblies of God is. So we're both part of the Assemblies of God, Mark and me. And the Assemblies of God, sometimes I understand they won't, not only just the embassy, but does the Assemblies of God warn you too? That's my understanding, is that they will say, hey, we don't want you to go into such and such an area.
Absolutely. That is, they're really good about listening to the missionaries, but then also we've pulled people out of what we call sensitive countries, or when they go in, they go very carefully. We had, when we were dead about, 8 years or so in South Africa, we were there when Nelson Mandela was elected, and during that time, it was very tense, and we had a contingency plan in place at a moment with our missions board contacted us within, if we were told within a week you have to be out, or a couple of days, or an hour. We were prepared. my wife and I were hijacked at gunpoint in South Africa, and they stole our vehicle. But by God's grace, they left us standing alongside the street, and they took our vehicle, but they had a gun pointed at me, but they didn't kill us. And a couple hours later, right there in our neighborhood, another father and son were hijacked as well. And I'm sorry to say, God, they were shot and killed. It was tragic, hijacking. You know, South Africa was very dangerous. And we got back to the States, and we were sharing with someone about the hijack. And they asked, when did that happen, and where, what time, and all that. You ain't know where I'm going, but they were in Denver, Colorado. And on that day, it was like, I get the 3:15 in the afternoon in South Africa, 7:15 in the morning, or whatever calculated out. As we were being hijacked, that couple were in their devotions praying for us by name, us and our two kids. Huh. And we truly believe it was God's grace that spared our lives that day because of the prayers of God's people back in this case, Colorado.
Oh my gosh. Why is it so important to you, Mark? Why would clean drinking water and this message of salvation be so important to you to risk these situations?
Well, first of all, I don't want to mislead you that we're constantly in danger.
Sure,
that's
yeah.
not the case, but mm-hmm. those things do happen. Why is it important? To sound like I think most missionaries would say, if we feel like it's a calling that God gave us. I mean, believe me, if there was something else to do, I think we would have done it. But I think it wasn't a lark. It wasn't a midlife crisis to take my wife and two young children in those days, about 30 years ago. When we went, we felt like it was what God wanted us to do, and we felt like we could contribute. It was our goal to be a servant, to serve the people. How can we help? And how can we spread the message of Jesus Christ? Like I said, it impacts their eternity. In our case, for the last 10, 12 years, we've been doing it, more than that, actually, have been doing it with water. And it opens so many doors, and it's a wonderful, you know, I may not be, you know, most well-educated or, you know, to teach in Bible schools, but I, you know, or whatever, which I've done some, but I can share the gospel through the water. It's a great opportunity. And we're there to serve the church. We, the national church in these countries, we work completely through them. They're much more effective than we could ever be because, you know, they understand the culture, the language, the history, and they can live places that would be very difficult for us to live. So if we can go in and drill a well and help the local church, the churches grow phenomenally, and the people come. I mean, it's like the circus coming to town sometimes. Draw big crowds. And if that's what it takes to get the message of Jesus Christ to them, then that's why we do it. And we, you know, we're glad to do it.
Yeah. How much does that really... I can't wrap my mind around how much we have in America. And I mean, I could just go to my faucet and turn on water, and it would be...
Yeah.
You know, just amazing compared to what these people drink every day. And that's just the very base line of what I have here. I have clothes on my back. I have shelter in every season. You know, how much can we learn from people in Africa that we have so much here and we're so blessed?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what I say often is, you know, here in this country, in America, we're incredibly blessed. We wash our clothes, our hands, we drink clean water without worrying about getting sick, we wash our cars, we wash our dogs, you know. I don't have a problem with any of that. I don't want anybody to ever feel guilty because we are living in a culture where in a society where we have these things.
Yeah.
What I always say is just feel blessed. We are truly, truly blessed because much of the world does not have that privilege, that things we take for granted. You know, I go to the faucet, I go to, you know, the refrigerator door, I get clean water, and don't even think about it. If you'll allow me one little story, we have had a little girl several years ago up in Oregon, and her name was, I guess I can use her name, Ava. Mm-hmm. And Ava, she was about 12 years old, 11 or 12, and she saw a couple of little girls who were adopted from Ethiopia. And these two little girls, these two little sisters, somehow she knew the family and so on, but they both held plastic water bottles that we drink our water out of. Well, they were given a bottle of water and they drank it, but then that was their favorite toy because it represented clean water. They knew they could get a refill. And when Ava saw that and heard about these little girls, it really struck her. So she went to her pastor of a small church, less than 100, and said she wanted to help people in Africa get fresh water, children specifically. And that pastor, bless his heart, instead of saying, oh, that's fine, little girl, but he said, no, let's do it. Well, to abbreviate a long story, Ava and her mother and her family and her parents, their whole community got together. This little girl went door to door to businesses. And to make a long story short, they raised over $12,000 to help with a well. And Ava's done it three more times. And she's grown through the years just because she had compassion for these people in Africa that needed water. And I had the joy of going to Ava's church and meeting that dear, sweet little girl. And she was amazing. She's now a teenager and growing and continuing to sponsor wells in Africa.
Wow. So it costs about $12,000 for a well?
You know, the most often asked question we get and the hardest to answer is how much it costs. Because there's so many variables. But I'll give you an answer. For example, Malawi, we were doing wells for about $6,500. That's everything. But then over in, for example, in Gabon, we put two wells of $32,000. And you can imagine, you know, the difference. A lot of variables, how deep, how far, how remote, how hard it is to get equipment, people in there. So when people ask, I would say it. Average is going to be somewhere around $12,000 to $15,000. We're doing a lot of wells right now in a place called the Gambia, and those wells are costing exactly $13,875. I mean, that's an exact cost. We do not have any administrative costs. We're missionaries. I get nothing from it. You know, we're missionaries. The money goes to the wells. And if other organizations, you know, sometimes say they can do them cheaper. Well, bless them. That's fine. But we put in a good deep well that is village maintainable and will last a long time.
How long does it last?
We're using a pump that we used to get in Ghana. It's called the AfriDev, developed for Africa. And I've seen them myself that have been there 25 years in Ghana. And so if it's done well, it's important when we in West Africa there, we would always leave spare parts, leave tools, leave manuals in either English or French. We would do training and do everything we could to make that maintained because we felt like that represents not just us and the project, but it represents God, you know, this church. Brought us this water, and this well lasted 6 months. It must not be much of a God, if you know what I mean. So we tried to do the best we can to make it last as long as it can. There's what we call skeletons they're broken pumps all over Africa, thousands, tens of thousands of them. You could have a whole ministry just fixing old pumps that are broken from different organizations.
Wow.
So, but to answer you, yeah, that would be cost-wise, would be about where we're at.
So they last maybe, I think you may have told me one time, 25 years?
Well, yeah, the ones, like, for example, I've seen have been lasted 25, and again, I don't want this to sound wrong, but one of my friends, actually the man who sold me the Ghanaian that sold us some pumps, he said, you have to understand, Pastor, he said, maintenance is not a word in African. vocabulary. So we really emphasize some basic, simple maintenance. That's why we try to get a good village maintainable, Africa maintainable pumps, and so they will last for a long time.
What if people want to donate? Sure. What should they do?
Well, I think this would be a case where they could go to our website. It's and there are several ways there, several donate buttons. The Africa Oasis Project. .com.org or AfricaOasis.com.org, whatever. And those, that would lead there. Plus, there's videos, there's a lot, you know, material. See my face. And we have another missionary couple that work with us, and they're in southern Africa. They're in Pretoria right now.
Very good.
Going to Zambia.
Yeah. I have a question about that, and then we'll talk. Hopefully a little sure. about your recent work, but is there water under every surface? Like, I don't know. What are there? Can I just go out back here and just dig for what, 200 feet? I was at Walmart, and my friend, he's a gentleman who he grew up in probably the 1950s, 1960s. And he said how he's a rural guy. He said how, you know, you can dig, and after you get past a certain point, it's like rock. It's like a rock bed down there in the earth. And then you keep going. And then there's water, and it gets more pure the deeper you go down. And I think he said it was about 220 feet. So is there just water ever under every surface?
No, not really. I can't say every surface. We would do what we call geophysical survey. We had someone that would do that. We would hire. You know, I'm not a well driller per se. I wasn't raised, or, you know, I was a pastor when I went to Africa, so I'm learning on the job. But we would do a geophysical survey, have a guy do that, and give us for each location and give us the idea of where the water might be and how deep it might be. And we'd have two or three options that he would give us in each location. And all that did was increase your chances. It did not guarantee water. I'm sorry to say that over the years we have had a few dry holes. They do happen, but that really, it's a heart-wrenching experience for you, for us, for the villagers. We've had some situation. I can think of one where we had a dry hole, but we went over about 100 yards and drilled again, and we got good water. And then there's other places. I listened to the drillers that we hired. We drilled, for example, on the border between Togo and Benin. There was a region that was just so full of, there was no water. I mean, he told us we'll be very fortunate. He said, I've drilled many wells over there and have yet to strike water in that region. And sure enough, we didn't either. And you feel terrible about it. And you think of your donors as well. You've got churches and people giving. And so it's tragic. It does happen once in a while, but by God's grace, we usually hit water. I would say 95% or more we hit water. We had a place in northern Togo at a Bible school where we hired a driller. He drilled, and we got water, and it was bringing in what we do a volume test, about 2,000 liters per hour. And so he went to the head of the village and told him, you know, the head of the area said, we've got a well and it's bringing in 2,000 liters an hour. And the man said, no, you don't. Said, that can't happen. He said, we've drilled three wells there in that region and found no well, no water at all. And we had drilled through some really hard rock. We had to break through that rock. But when he said, I'll come see. So when he came to see, by the time we got there, it had increased to 9,000 liters per hour. Huh. And when you drill, rock is hard to drill through, but it's really good for several reasons. One being it's very porous and the water will come through. But number two, it also gives you a really good shaft. You know, it's not going to fall in like loose dirt or sand. But then shortly before, last time it was I was there in that place where they drilled the well, it was running 22,000 liters per hour.
That's fast,
and
right?
So, that's a lot. That provided water for everybody around there. And we were, of course, saying God's still bringing water from the rock, you know, like in the scripture. Yeah. And so few dry holes. It happens once in a rare while, but you know, we try to avoid that as best we can.
How have you seen these wells impact communities whenever they had to walk, each person had to walk, you know, somebody from the family had to walk for, what, 8 hours a day? And then what is it like, what kind of a life does it bring to a community whenever they now can just go to their local spigot and get some out?
Yeah, it brings a story to mind. There's I'm sorry, I'm full of stories, but as an example, there's a place called Chinkosi up in the upper northwest Benin. And the church in Benin asked us to put a well there. And there was an old lady. I don't know how old she was, bless her heart. I tried to visit with her a little bit, but she was a really, really old lady. Every evening of her life, every day, she would walk several kilometers, 4 or 5 kilometers, to go to a shallow hand-dug well that was, you know, a long ways away, but she would take a little handful of food, and she would take, she'd carry a big aluminum, like a dishpan, big aluminum dishpan. She would sit down next to the well every evening, eat her little bit of food, and then pass the night, or sleep, right there next to the well. But she's old, so first thing in the morning, she could be one of the first ones to dip, you know, drop the bucket down with the rope and dip that well and get some of that dirty water. Because, you know, by the time, if she had done it during the day, by the time she got there, the well would be dry. A lot of them will dry up and they have to sort of refill. Well, so every day she would do that. And then she would walk home with that pan on her head. Well, they asked us, the Benin law asked, and then somebody got a church asked us to drill a well in Chinkosi. So there by the church in the village, we drilled a well, a deep well, got fresh, fresh water, plentiful water. And that dear, sweet little old lady was standing there with all the other people. And when the water began to flow, she began to do her little dance. And I'm just crazy enough, I went over and we joined hands and we did a little happy dance. It wasn't pretty, but it was rejoicing. Yes. But, you know, it changed her life. She didn't have to walk that great distance just to get dirty water. Now she had plentiful fresh water, as did the entire community. We've seen places, for example, a place called Agbalawiki, where the chief of the village, which is in Togo, he came to the pastor and said, "Will you please pray that we can get some fresh water?" Because what was happening was the village was suffering from yellow fever. Yellow fever doesn't come from the water, but it comes from the mosquitoes at the stagnant water. They had a filthy little pond swamp thing, and people were suffering from yellow fever. Well, by God's grace, the Togolese Assemblies of God asked us to go into Agbalawiki and to drill a deep freshwater well, and the rashes went away, the yellow fever went away, people were much healthier because of the clean water, and of course the church grew tremendously, people wanted to come, so it really does change their lives.
Man, do you have any stories of outbreaks, I think, of revival? You told me, I think, the other day that there was some churches that were just springing up, maybe as a result of this, or can you tell me a little about the revivals that are going on there?
Oh, I'll tell you what, it's exciting, because people, first of all, you got to understand, in Africa, people love to sing and dance, and they have a lot of joy, so When we have the opportunity, you know, the churches, the national churches in the countries, I'm dealing mostly in West Africa, but all over Africa, they're very aggressive and progressive about planting new churches. For example, in Togo, where I live, the national church leadership was saying every church should plant a church every year. Well, that's a big mandate. Well, yeah. Water, and you know, I'm not saying every church plant a church every year, but they sure came close, you know. But when you are providing fresh water, and then we've seen when they'll tell them about the Jesus Christ, let's just say the spirit world is nothing new in Africa, you know. There's all kinds of traditional and voodoo and animistic beliefs and things. But when we can come in and provide fresh water, they'll listen to the message of Jesus Christ. I'll tell you who one of the most enthusiastic people is when you watch in Southern Africa, they were called a Sengoma, a witch doctor, or in West Africa, they were called a fetish priest. When you see one of those completely commit their lives to Christ, all that energy and all that power they had, you know, and charisma they had as a witch doctor, they get sold out to Jesus. My goodness, they're your best evangelist. They're your best church member. They're excited and wanting to do all kinds of things. And so when people see the fresh water and hear about the living water, churches grow. I've seen little tiny churches made out of sticks and grass roof. And when we drill a deep well in a place, Kajali, for example, we drill a deep well in Kajali, and they, next thing you know, they're building a cement block building around their little stick church in the middle of it. And then they tear that down, they have a bigger church. The in Kajali, that was one where they didn't want us to come in. It was a Muslim community, and they said, no, we don't want up the church. And we asked, we could drill a well. They said, we'll give you land if you'll drill the well. Then, in that village, when the well was flowing, the chief made a mandate, gave a speech to the village and said, you will not bother the people of the church because they brought us the fresh water. And then he went on, he said, and if you bother them, they'll take the water away, which, of course, we would never, ever do. But so they went from not wanting a church at all to a thriving, exploding church because of the change in attitude of the chief and all the people.
Can you share a story of any of the witch doctors or the fetish priests that were radically transformed? And yeah, and it just kind of stuck out to me. Like, what was that like? Have you met any of them personally?
One or two. Back in South Africa, we had a Sengoma, they're called, that radically got saved. And we had from time to time, we would have a burning of all the fetishes. And
what's a fetish? What's a fetish?
Oh, I'm sorry. It has different meanings here in America. I'm sorry. A fetish would be like an amulet. Maybe we burn drums, we burn jars of all kinds of, you know, animal skins and all kinds of things they would worship. There would be carvings, wood carvings, and things of that nature that they would, you know, use to get their power from.
Oh, okay.
And something, I remember there was one man in Ghana, the pastor told me, this is our two fetish Christian. I said, what? He said, in his home, he had over 120 fetishes of different wall hangings and strings and hides and this and that. But as he gave his life to Christ, he began to get rid of those. And he had burned this, and then he'd get rid of that. And it took time, and he was down to the last two. But he loved the Lord and said, you know, I'll get rid of these two. But, so it changes. In a place called Bachebelo in South Africa, there was a woman that was just full of vibrance and just loved the Lord and led the worship in this place. And just full. And the pastor told me later, he said, she used to be a Sengoma. You know, she used to be a witch doctor, but now she just loves the Lord, a great evangelist, if you will, telling people about this Jesus who delivered her. And, you know, so yeah, there's a lot of excitement.
Oh, man, that's amazing.
If I'm rambling, please tell me if I'm going too far.
No, these are good stories. I appreciate that. What about your children? What did your children think about? Because, I mean, I've thought about what would it be like to be a missionary. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of people are wondering about that. Like, what if you're, I guess, a teen and you're brought over there, what did your children think about being in that environment?
Oh, my, that was like 30 years ago when we first went. They were pretty young, but I remember we talked as a family, and we prayed, and we wanted to make sure the kids were on board, that we weren't just ripping them out of their friends and school and going off to Africa. You know, we didn't do that. We we had to, of course, raise funds for a while, but our kids were totally on board. They would go with us to all the churches and talk about Africa, and I'm excited to go. And then when we got there, my daughter was the youngest, a little grade school girl, and boy, she just began to have all kinds of friends, and she picked up a South African accent immediately. We could tell whether she was talking to her friends that were nationals, or, you know, or her MK, or missionary kid friends. She'd speak American English with her missionary friends and South African English. An example, my son and I went up with another missionary into the mountains of Lesotho, a country that's totally surrounded by South Africa. It's up in the mountains, about 10,000 feet. And we stayed in a tent. We went with a pastor. We were going to shoot some video and do some kids ministry up there. So we sent the other missionary, he was a dear friend, and myself and my son, he was 16 at the time. We set up our tent to sleep in, and man, it was cold. It was so cold that night. And so we're in our sleeping bags and in our clothes and in our on our cots that we had in there, those five-man tents that'll sleep three, you know. So we, all of a sudden, we hadn't been in bed very long. All of a sudden, we hear boom, 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 and going around our tent, somebody was beating a drum, and the local pastor quickly came and unzipped the tent and slipped in. He said, "It's okay, it's okay." He said, "It's the local Sangoma, the witch doctor, is marching around our tent with a child beating a drum, just kind of to make sure we knew that this was her village. It was a woman, Sangoma, and we were on her turf." Well, I'm sitting, laying there thinking, what's my son thinking about this? You know, a witch doctor walking around the tent beating on a drum in the night. He looked over at me and he said, "Dad, this is just like National Geographic." I said, "He's fine. He's doing fine." Yeah, it didn't bother him too much. But yeah, we got our children totally involved in our ministry. They worked with children. There were some healthcare teams that would come, and they would always work with them. And so, yeah, they were totally involved. Okay, I'm going
to... Very good.
Can you still hear me?
A little.
Just,
yeah, you're good. If you need to step away for a moment, that's fine.
No, I just had to change AirPods. Mine was dying.
Oh, but, very good.
So I got the other one. So yeah, we just involved them in the ministry, and they're now grown adults, and I think they would tell you that they had a wonderful experience. You know, I mean, I'll tell you what, when people ask what to pray for, I tell them, first and foremost, pray for the families, pray for those MKs, those missionary kids.
Yeah.
That's a real challenge to be in remote environments and not, you know, where do I belong?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. What have you felt like, you talked about how it was kind of startling with the witch doctor banging the drum, and have you ever been in the bush and kind of... seen snakes, and have you been concerned about your safety? Has it been dangerous with animals or the climate or anything?
I can't say I've, you know, fought any lions or wrestled a snake or a crocodile or anything of that nature. I think God has just protected us over the years. There are some missionaries that have some of those kind of stories. I saw a very large cobra from a bit of a distance. They told us he was down there, and so I ran down the lane. I just wanted to see him. But then he slipped off across out into the grass where I couldn't see him, and I said, "Nope, that's close enough. I'm not going to chase him out there where I can't see what's going on." So, I'm no crocodile hunter or anything like that. But we've just asked God to give us grace, you know.
That's right. In 2019, of course, the COVID virus came out. So before we talk about the virus much, have you seen how digital has affected you guys and how you do ministry? Have you guys gotten into maybe even social media? And have you guys seen an impact there? Or I don't know, how involved are you with social media and digital?
To be honest with you, it's limited in the fact that, you know, I've had well-meaning and wonderful pastors asked me, could you, you know, could we do a live podcast or live stream from a village well? You know, well, that doesn't work. I mean, they don't, you know, a lot of these villages we work in, they don't have electricity, sewer, internet, nothing. It's interesting, though. You can go pretty far out there and you'll find them with a cell phone. We've never really been able to do a lot of that, especially in West Africa and many places, especially like Togo where we live. The internet, I joked with somebody, I said, dial-up looks good. Huh. You know, when you're even in the city. I would have friends send me emails with their big, beautiful signatures and pictures at the bottom. I said, no, don't do that. Just put your name. And back then, we like K. We like kilobyte. We don't like megabyte. That'd take me all night long, take hours to download an email that was a megabyte. You know, it's getting better. Wow. It's getting better, and I can't say that's all of Africa. But and a lot of it. So we haven't done a lot. We've got, of course, the Africa Oasis Project website. And we had tried to keep up with a Facebook for a while, but it was really difficult. It took so long to upload stuff. Hmm. So I'm afraid I'm not as techie as a lot of the missionaries are. We were cutting-edge missionaries when we went to Africa in 90. When we were appointed in 90, we took a fax machine. We thought, boy, this is really cutting-edge.
Big time.
Yeah.
Well, how's COVID-19 affected you guys there?
When we came back to the States to help my mother-in-law, she was really sick and things. So we stayed here with her for a while. And so we've been here. We've had a lot of our missionaries who were either unable to get out of America to go back out of the States to go back to their country. We're just now, the couples that worked with us in the Africa Oasis Project, just this week flew out to get back to Zimbabwe. It's hard. They're making it very difficult to get in and out of these countries. And then we've had people there who were having trouble getting out of whatever country they may be in Africa, and they would get stuck either here or there because of the COVID-19. Now, in the villages, they really are, as many as you'll see often, they're wearing a mask of some sort or another. It may be a rag, you know, some sort of media has gone through. Mm. So they're trying the best they can, but a lot of times in the villages we were in, they would say, well, I need to go to the clinic, and get an injection, whatever it was, whatever they had over the years, they would just want to get an injection of some sort. Well, of course, nowadays, with the COVID, the virus vaccines will make it, you know, into West Africa or Central Africa. But, and besides, again, I use Togo, forgive me, but when we first went to Togo 30 years ago, we first went to Togo, we had to get a lot of different shots before we could go, and in the county health clinic here in America, it had a listing of 10 different sicknesses and viruses and things that you could get and around the world, and 9 of them were in Togo. The only one that wasn't was the Asian flu, which was in Asia. So, you know, sickness and disease are everywhere. My wife and I both had our shares. You know, I've had malaria a couple of times and things of that nature. So COVID sickness is bad, no question about it, but it's nothing new. You know, when they're dealing with all kinds of things. I don't know, that's just my opinion, by the way. If somebody hears this, like, no, that's just my thoughts.
You've already been through the ringer with the sicknesses and diseases and things.
A little bit.
Well, how many wells and different water purification systems did you guys coordinate last year, this year? What's it been like?
Well, I'm going to come up short on exact figures. My wife is, bless her heart, is our bookkeeper, administrator, and has that all on top of her head. We've done probably 700 or 800 wells in the last, I don't know, 5-6 years. But it's not just wells. For example, in Tanzania, we had a request for rain catchment systems, which is just kind of a glorified gutter system that drains into a good, clean tank, big tank. Mm. We call them a poly tank, they're plastic. We had 100 the missionaries there, and the National Church asked for 100 of those, which those were like $1,500 a piece, so those were more bite-sized, so to speak. We could do a whole lot of those. In the Gambia right now, we're working our way through 60, 70 wells. We take them in groups of like 10 or 12 at a time, and I think we're over... We're into the 20s within this last year. Of course, it's been hard. For example, our missionary in the Gambia, they came home for a wedding while their kids went and got stranded here because of COVID. So we carry on, and it's of course slowed down with COVID this year in 2020. But they're continuing. We did two wells, big Bible school wells in Equatorial Guinea. So, we're trying to do what we can in spite of the restrictions that we find.
So you have Steve and Glenda, who are...
Steve and Glenda Evans.
Your cohorts there. And you also said you had some people on your team, I understand. Do you have a whole team of people who go there and do work with you?
No, we really don't. We're not that big an organization. We had three couples, but each, like Vicky and I, when we started, we were assigned to West and Central Africa. We had a couple in East Africa, and we have the Evanses in Southern Africa. And then over time, somebody retired, things changed, and so we're working a lot. Part of what we do is then consult and work with local missionaries in the different countries, and our colleague missionaries become part of our AOP team, you might say. They're not assigned to us. They're doing many, many other things. But like in the Gambia, I bring that up because it's recent, I was able to work with those folks, and they hadn't put in wells before. And once I went over, we spent time, and they're going great guns. We've got others in other countries where we've had the opportunity to help in Senegal and different places. So our entire missionary body, so to speak, has the potential of being part of our team. Now, when we in Togo, right there, hands-on, when I have been doing, I have a couple of nationals, wonderful, wonderful couple, and others that we hire that work with us, help us with a lot of the languages and a lot of the things. So, but as far as a team, our own drilling rigs, or things of that nature, we don't have that.
Okay. Well, Mark, I'm going to go ahead and thank you exceedingly for all your work. Man.
My goodness, you've allowed me to talk a long time. I apologize for rambling on.
No.
Thank you for your interest, man. Thank you. And those who are listening, I hope they're just inspired to pray for those folks in Africa and realize how blessed we are.
Yeah, you're a hero to me, as well as your wife and Steve and Glenda. And man, it's just amazing all the stuff you're doing there. But I thank you again for coming on, and that's the show, and you have a wonderful day.
Hey, Brett, thank you, and thank you to all your listeners.